Chapter 9. Come, come. Apostrophe apostrophe return the carrier, clapping his sounding hands. Where's the pipe? Apostrophe apostrophe I quite forgot the pipe, John. Apostrophe forgot the pipe. Was such a wonder ever heard of? She forgot the pipe. I'll fill it directly. It's soon done. Apostrophe, but it was not so soon done either. It lay in the usual place, the carrier's dreadnought pocket with the little pouch, her own work, from which she was used to fill it, but her hand shook so that she entangled it, and yet her hand was small enough to have come out easily, I am sure, and bungled terribly. The filling of the pipe and lighting it, those little offices in which I have commended her discretion, were vilely done, from first to last. During the whole process, Tackleton stood looking on maliciously with a half-closed eye, which, whenever it met hers or caught it, for it can hardly be said to have ever met another eye, rather being a kind of trap, to snatch it up augmented her confusion in the most remarkable degree. Why, what a clumsy dot you are, this afternoon! Apostrophe apostrophe said John. I could have done it better myself, I verify believe. Apostrophe apostrophe, with these good-natured words, he strode away, and presently was heard, in company with Boxer, and the old horse, and the cart, making lively music down the road. What time the dreamy Caleb still stood, watching his blind daughter, with the same expression on his face. Bertha! Apostrophe apostrophe said Caleb, softly. What has happened? How changed you are, my darling, in a few hours since this morning. You silent and dull all day. What is it? Tell me. Apostrophe, oh father, father. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the blind girl, bursting into tears. Oh my hard, hard fate. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Caleb drew his hand across his eyes, before he answered her. But think how cheerful, and how happy you have been, Bertha. How good, and how much loved, by many people. Apostrophe, that strikes me to the heart, dear father. Always so mindful of me. Always so kind to me. Apostrophe, Caleb was very much perplexed to understand her. To be blind, Bertha, my poor dear, apostrophe he faltered, is a great affliction. But apostrophe, I have never felt it. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the blind girl. I have never felt it, in its fullness. Never. I have sometimes wished that I could see you, or could see him only once, dear father, only for one little minute, that I might know what it is I treasure up, apostrophe she laid her hands upon her breast, and hold here, that I might be sure, and have it right. And sometimes, but then I was a child, I have wept in my prayers at night, to think that when your images ascended from my heart to heaven, they might not be the true resemblance of yourselves. But I have never had these feelings long. They have passed away, and left me tranquil and contented. Apostrophe, and they will again, apostrophe said Caleb. But, father, oh my good, gentle father, bear with me, if I am wicked. Apostrophe apostrophe said the blind girl. This is not the sorrow that so weighs me down. Apostrophe apostrophe her father could not choose but let his moist eyes overflow. She was so earnest and pathetic, but he did not understand her yet. Bring her to me, apostrophe said Bertha. I cannot hold it close and shut within myself. Bring her to me, father. Apostrophe, she knew he hesitated, and said, May. Bring May. Apostrophe, May heard the mention of her name, and coming quietly towards her, touched her on the arm. The blind girl turned immediately, and held her by both hands. Look into my face, dear heart, sweetheart. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Bertha. Read it with your beautiful eyes, and tell me, if the truth is written on it. Apostrophe, dear Bertha, yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the blind girl still, upturning the blank sightless face, down which the tears were coursing fast, addressed her in these words. There is not, in my soul, a wish or thought that is not for your good, bright May. There is not, in my soul, a grateful recollection stronger than the deep remembrance which is stored there, of the many, many times when, in the full pride of sight and beauty, you have had consideration for blind Bertha, even when we two were children, or when Bertha was as much a child as ever blindness can be. Every blessing on your head. Light upon your happy course. Not the less, my dear May, apostrophe, and she drew towards her, in a closer grasp. Not the less, my bird, because, today, the knowledge that you are to be his wife has wrung my heart almost to breaking. Father, May, Mary, oh forgive me, that it is so, for the sake of all he has done to relieve the weariness of my dark life. And for the sake of the belief you have in me, when I call heaven to witness, that I could not wish him married to a wife more worthy of his goodness. ... While speaking, she had released May Fielding's hands, and clasped her garments in an attitude of mingled supplication and love. Sinking lower and lower down, as she proceeded in her strange confession, she dropped at last at the feet of her friend, and hid her blind face in the folds of her dress. Great power! ... exclaimed her father, smitten at one blow with the truth. Have I deceived her from the cradle, but to break her heart at last? ... It was well for all of them that Dot, that beaming, useful, busy little Dot, for such she was, whatever faults she had, and however you may learn to hate her, in good time it was well for all of them, I say, that she was there. Or where this would have ended, it were hard to tell. But Dot, recovering her self-possession, interposed, before May could reply, or Caleb say another word. Come, come, dear Bertha. Come away with me. Give her your arm, May. So. How composed she is, you see, already, and how good it is of her to mind us, ... said the cheery little woman, kissing her upon the forehead. Come away, dear Bertha. Come. And here's her good father will come with her, won't you, Caleb? To be sure. ... Well, well, she was a noble little Dot in such things, and it must have been an obdurate nature that could have withstood her influence. When she had got poor Caleb and his Bertha away, that they might comfort and console each other, as she knew they only could, she presently came bouncing back, the saying is, as fresh as any daisy, I say fresher, to mount guard over that bridling little piece of consequence in the cap and gloves, and prevent the dear old creature from making discoveries. So bring me the precious baby, Tilly, ... said she, drawing a chair to the fire, and while I have it in my lap, here's Mrs. Fielding, Tilly, will tell me all about the management of babies, and put me right in 20 points, where I'm as wrong as can be. Won't you, Mrs. Fielding? ... Not even the Welsh giant, who, according to the popular expression, was so slow as to perform a fatal surgical operation upon himself, in emulation of a juggling trick achieved by his archenemy at breakfast time, not even he fell half so readily into the snare prepared for him, as the old lady did into this artful pitfall. The fact of Tackleton having walked out, and furthermore, of two or three people having been talking together at a distance, for 2 minutes, leaving her to her own resources, was quite enough to have put her on her dignity, and the bewilderment of that mysterious convulsion in the indigo trade, for 24 hours. But this becoming deference to her experience, on the part of the young mother, was so irresistible, that after a short affectation of humility, she began to enlighten her with the best grace in the world, and sitting bolt upright before the wicked Dot, she did, in 30 minutes, deliver more infallible domestic recipes and precepts than would, if acted on, have utterly destroyed and done up that young peer Bingle, though he had been an infant Samson. To change the theme, Dot did a little needlework. She carried the contents of a whole workbox in her pocket. However she contrived it, I don't know, then did a little nursing, then a little more needlework, then had a little whispering chat with May, while the old lady dozed, and so in little bits of bustle, which was quite her manner always, found it a very short afternoon. Then, as it grew dark, and as it was a solemn part of this institution of the picnic, that she should perform all Bertha's household tasks, she trimmed the fire, and swept the hearth, and set the tea board out, and drew the curtain, and lighted a candle. Then she played an air or two on a rude kind of harp, which Caleb had contrived for Bertha, and played them very well. For nature had made her delicate little ear as choice a one for music as it would have been for jewels, if she had had any to wear. By this time it was the established hour for having tea, and Tackleton came back again, to share the meal, and spend the evening. Caleb and Bertha had returned some time before, and Caleb had sat down to his afternoon's work. But he couldn't settle to it, poor fellow, being anxious and remorseful for his daughter. It was touching to see him sitting idle on his working stool, regarding her so wistfully, and always saying in his face, "Have I deceived her from her cradle, but to break her heart?" When it was night, and tea was done, and Dot had nothing more to do, in washing up the cups and saucers. In a word, for I must come to it, and there is no use in putting it off when the time drew nigh for expecting the carrier's return in every sound of distant wheels, her manner changed again, her color came and went, and she was very restless. Not as good wives are, when listening for their husbands. No, no, no. It was another sort of restlessness from that. Wheels heard. A horse's feet. The barking of a dog. The gradual approach of all the sounds. The scratching paw of Boxer at the door. Whose step is that? Cried Bertha, starting up. Whose step? Returned the carrier, standing in the portal, with his brown face ruddy as a winter berry from the keen night air. Why, mine. The other step, said Bertha. The man's tread behind you. She is not to be deceived, observed the carrier, laughing. Come along, sir. You'll be welcome, never fear. He spoke in a loud tone. And as he spoke, the deaf old gentleman entered. He's not so much a stranger, that you haven't seen him once, Caleb, said the carrier. You'll give him house room till we go? Oh surely, John, and take it as an honor. He's the best company on earth, to talk secrets in, said John. I have reasonable good lungs, but he tries 'em, I can tell you. Sit down, sir. All friends here, and glad to see you. When he had imparted this assurance, in a voice that amply corroborated what he had said about his lungs, he added in his natural tone, a chair in the chimney corner, and leave to sit quite silent, and look pleasantly about him, is all he cares for. He's easily pleased. Bertha had been listening intently. She called Caleb to her side, when he had set the chair, and asked him, in a low voice, to describe their visitor. When he had done so, truly now, with scrupulous fidelity, she moved, for the first time, since he had come in, and sighed, and seemed to have no further interest concerning him. The carrier was in high spirits, good fellow that he was, and fonder of his little wife than ever. A clumsy dot she was, this afternoon. He said, encircling her with his rough arm, as she stood, removed from the rest, and yet I like her somehow. See yonder, dot. He pointed to the old man. She looked down. I think she trembled. He's ha ha ha. He's full of admiration for you. Said the carrier. Talked of nothing else, the whole way here. Why, he's a brave old boy. I like him for it. I wish he had had a better subject, John, she said, with an uneasy glance about the room. At Tackleton especially. A better subject. Cried the jovial John. There's no such thing. Come, off with the great coat, off with the thick shawl, off with the heavy wrappers. And a cozy half hour by the fire. My humble service, mistress. A game at cribbage, you and I? That's hearty. The cards and board, dot. And a glass of beer here, if there's any left, small wife. Apostrophe, apostrophe, his challenge was addressed to the old lady, who accepting it with gracious readiness, they were soon engaged upon the game. At first, the carrier looked about him sometimes, with a smile, or now and then called Dot, to peep over his shoulder at his hand, and advise him on some knotty point. But his adversary being a rigid disciplinarian, and subject to an occasional weakness in respect of pegging more than she was entitled to, required such vigilance on his part, as left him neither eyes nor ears to spare. Thus, his whole attention gradually became absorbed upon the cards, and he thought of nothing else, until a hand upon his shoulder restored him to a consciousness of Tackleton. I am sorry to disturb you, but a word, directly. Apostrophe, I'm going to deal, apostrophe returned the carrier. It's a crisis. Apostrophe, it is, apostrophe said Tackleton. Come here, man. Apostrophe, there was that in his pale face which made the other rise immediately, and ask him, in a hurry, what the matter was. Hush. John Peerybingle, apostrophe said Tackleton. I am sorry for this. I am indeed. I have been afraid of it. I have suspected it from the first. Apostrophe, what is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked the carrier, with a frightened aspect. Hush. I'll show you, if you'll come with me. Apostrophe, the carrier accompanied him, without another word. They went across a yard, where the stars were shining, and by a little side door, into Tackleton's own counting house, where there was a glass window, commanding the wareroom, which was closed for the night. There was no light in the counting house itself, but there were lamps in the long narrow wareroom, and consequently the window was bright. A moment. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tackleton. Can you bear to look through that window, do you think? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why not? Apostrophe, apostrophe returned the carrier. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.